My Govanan, welcome to Tolkien Lore Channel. I'm the Tolkien Geek, and this is a follow-up video to my previous one on five changes to the Peter Jackson movies that only super fans of the novels would notice, and I've got more changes for you this time, and we're still only in the Fellowship of the Ring. And some of these are kind of interesting, too, so let's just jump right on into it. First interesting change that I noticed was the order of the Fellowship, and what I mean by that is the you know, who's in front and who's in the back, not necessarily the order everywhere in between, because some of that doesn't really matter. But in the movie, we get this really iconic scene where they're kind of, we're getting this slow build of strings in the music that, you know, eventually becomes this grand swell of horns that we get as they're cresting this ridge with Gandalf in the front, followed by Frodo, and then Gimli, and then Legolas, and then we get some more hobbits, and then we get, you know, Aragorn is at the very back. In the book, Gandalf is in front, and Aragorn is in front with Gandalf, and it specifically said the reason why this is the case is he knows the country, and he knows it even in the dark, which is when they're traveling in the book, which, you know, traveling at night so as to avoid detection by any possible spies of Sauron who might be trying to, you know, keep an eye on where the ring is. And Legolas, who is the keen-eyed elf, is at the back as the rear guard specifically for that reason. So, it's a tiny little change that seems like it doesn't matter at all, but Tolkien actually thought through why, you know, the people in the front and the back were there, and it matters. Next interesting change is, in the movie, of course, we get this scene where they're all kind of camped out in the middle of the day, seemingly, and Boromir's practicing with Merry and Pippin, with their, you know, teaching them a little bit of sword play, and then all of a sudden they see this, you know, cloud out in the distance that is, according to Boromir, moving fast and against the wind. These words are used in the book, but not about the flock of Krebine. In fact, when the flock of Krebine come up, it's Aragorn and Sam on watch, and everybody else is sleeping, and, you know, they're just watching, and they see this thing coming, and they're like, what is that? And Aragorn kind of figures it out before Sam does. But the words, it's moving fast and against the wind, don't occur there. They actually occur while the Fellowship is on the move at night, and something seems to obscure the moon or the stars or something, and it's felt rather than seen, and Frodo is, you know, kind of concerned about it, and he asks Gandalf, what was that? And he says, I don't know. I felt it rather than saw it. It might have been just a passing cloud. And then it's either Boromir or Aragorn who says it was moving fast then and against the wind. I think it was Aragorn in the book. But the thing is, here we're talking about the first hint of the Nazgul, because this idea of feeling something that seems to obscure the moon and stars high overhead, which is not a cloud, this will come up several times in the book. And it's always a Nazgul, and it's always a flying Nazgul, and this is our first instance of something like that. So it raises the question, are they already out doing their thing? But it ain't a bunch of, you know, black birds flying around. It's something a little more sinister. Next one that I noticed was during the attempt at the Pass of Carathras. Now, of course, fans of the book and the movies will both know that Legolas, as an elf, has this preternatural ability to walk on the snow while everybody else is trudging with great toil and effort through the snow. Well, this happens in both the book and the movie, but the interesting thing about the movie is that it chooses to have that happen on the way up, not so much on the way down, because in the book, the snow is building as they work their way up. It isn't already all a huge drift. It gets really bad as they start going up and gets worse as they go up and eventually forces them to halt, and then the snow builds around them, and then Aragorn and Boromir have to kind of dig a path backwards while Legolas, being, you know, kind of a cheeky guy, he's like, yeah, I could just run across this and leave you all behind. So he jumps up onto the top of the snow and runs down. Up to that point, he hadn't been doing it because the snow on their way up wasn't deep enough to really make that matter. Now it is on the way down. So it's just one of these things where the amount of the snow in the book is really only that high after they've gotten to a point where they've had to stop and then think about going back down. Speaking of snow and Karadhras, Boromir in both the book and the movie displays quite a bit of concern for Frodo, Merry, Pippin, and Sam, because he's worried about the cold and the snow, basically killing them. And in both of, both versions, he says, this will be the death of, but in the movie, he says, the halflings, and in the movie, he says, the hobbits. Did I say in the movie he says, did I say the movie twice? In the book, he says, the halflings. In the movie, he says, the hobbits. And this seems like, who cares, right? Well, Tolkien chose his words carefully, and there's a very good reason why Boromir would call them the halflings. There's no indication that anybody's had like an in-depth conversation with Boromir about hobbit culture, what they call themselves, anything like that. So literally the only word he has in his conceptual framework for, this group is halflings, which comes from the Elvish word perianath or perion, plural or singular. So it's, this is the word that he has for this kind of person. And this is a reminder of that in the book. Whereas in the movie, everybody just calls them hobbits because we're just making it easy on the audience. But Tolkien wasn't about making it easy on the audience. He was about making the audience recognize, kind of the cultural and linguistic differences of the places and peoples, right? Which is a really interesting thing to do. And the movie just kind of skips right over that. Now we move on to attempting Moria, and we get a few different things here. One of them is, in both versions of the story, of course, Bill the Pony gets sent home. Interestingly enough, in the movie, Aragorn is the one who kind of makes this a point and helps Sam unload Bill the Pony and then sends him off and says, "Don't worry, Sam, he knows the way home." That's kind of cold comfort. Now, in the movie, we don't have the howling of wolves that we have in the background that we do in the book. So it's not quite as ominous, let's say, sending a pony out on its own. But in the book, we do have that, and this is, Gandalf is the one who says we're not going to be able to take Bill in the mines, and Sam is like, it's outright murder to send him out there because he's going to get eaten by wolves. And Gandalf, basically whispers something in Bill's ear and, kind of puts some words of guarding and guiding on him and sends him on his way and says, "There, Sam, he will have quite as much chance of making it home as we will." So, whatever effect Gandalf has, it seems to have worked ultimately, but it's Gandalf who sends him off, and it's a little more appropriate given the fact that he actually, makes Bill a little safer in the context, which is a lot more dangerous in the book. It's also more relevant because, and I'll, this is kind of speculation on Corey Olson's part, but in his Exploring the Lord of the Rings, he talks about how both Gandalf and Aragorn say they've been in the mines, but it's not clear that Aragorn has been through the mines. So it's not clear that Aragorn would actually know that there's no way for Bill the Pony to make it through. Whereas Gandalf would, because he's been all the way through. So it actually makes more sense that Gandalf is the one who is like, "Eh, Bill's not gonna make it." Another place where Aragorn is taking the place of somebody else while they're outside Moria is with the pool that is not really supposed to be there. And we don't know this in the movie. It's not really made a point of because we don't really have time to get into all that detail. But in the book, it's clear. This isn't supposed to be here. There's supposed to be a stream running, and they notice that the stream is dried up, and they're like, "Why?" And then they find out, oh, it's kind of dammed up, and there's this big pool here. Well, the pool is unhealthy looking, and it's kind of creepy, and it's creeped a bunch of them out. And Aragorn is in the place of Frodo here because Aragorn stops Merry and Pippin from throwing stones into the pool. Merry and Pippin seem to be just doing it out of, nah, whatever, we got nothing else to do, let's just throw rocks. In the book, what happens is Boromir gets really frustrated that Gandalf is not making progress, and he says, "I hate this pool," and he throws a rock into it. So it's not just idle time passing for Boromir. He's actually like venting frustration. And Frodo is the one who pipes up and says, "Why'd you do that? I don't like the pool either. And I'm actually kind of scared of it. Don't mess with it." So, and this is really kind of significant too, because when Aragorn says it in the movie, he says it as if he knows something. He's like, "Don't disturb the water." And he's looking out like watching for things. But there's no reason given in the movie why he should think that there's a significance to this. So that's kind of an interesting change, which also raises questions that can't really be answered. Whereas in the book, we at least get a lot of explanation of, this pool shouldn't be here. Also, it looks kind of gross. Also, it's kind of creepy. And, you know, we get all this. So it's like Frodo's kind of just going off of intuition. Just something is not right here. Whereas Aragorn is seemingly going off of, there's definitely something wrong, but I'm not going to explain why I think that. So we still haven't made it inside Moria yet, and we've got yet another change. And this time it's, again, got to do with Aragorn taking somebody else's place. So in the book, whenever Frodo gets grabbed by the Watcher in the water, it's Sam who runs up and kind of hacks the leg off. And in the movie, that doesn't happen because we have to draw out the tension and make it a whole battle scene moment. But the interesting thing about it is, ultimately, it's Aragorn who ends up slicing off a huge tentacle. Why is this change significant? Well, it's actually kind of significant because the way it happens in the movie is certainly an interpretive choice, which is not a necessary one. Because in the movie, we get this really giant thing with huge tentacles that can lift Frodo, you know, like a dozen feet in the air. In the book, he only gets dragged along the ground, and then the hobbits rush up and Sam hacks the thing off, you know, and pulls Frodo out. And it's not clear how big it is. The tentacles are described as snake-like, so it's possible they're really only, you know, quite thin and don't belong to anything big enough to lift Frodo out of the water. And so it's not really clear ever what the thing is, and we never see anything beyond the tentacles. And so, yeah, I mean, Sam rescuing it, it's perfectly plausible because we don't know how big the thing is, we don't know how strong the thing is, whereas in the movie, Peter Jackson clearly went for one extreme over the other so as to make a, you know, a more dramatic fight scene type of thing out of that whole event. So once we're finally in Moria, we get several things. I could point out the fact that Gollum catches up to them in Moria and they kind of notice it, but it's really not that big of a change, and so it's not that significant. But where he catches up to them and where Frodo notices him is kind of interesting, because it's at the three different directions that Gandalf's like, "I have no memory of this place." And he's like, "Which way do we go?" Well, in both the book and the movie, the decision is ultimately made, in part at least, based on the smell. And Gandalf says the air isn't so foul, right? And so he thinks that that's a good sign that, you know, they want to go that direction. There is an important difference, however, because in the book, Gandalf is also choosing the path that leads upward, whereas in the movie, he chooses one that leads downward. And he specifically says in the book, "We need to be heading up again anyway." So he has some sense of how deep they are in the mountain and where they need to be when they get to the other end. How he maintains that, you know, is anybody's guess. But the point being, in the movie, he chooses the downward sloping one for the same reason that it, you know, it doesn't smell so bad. But it's, you know, up and down, when you're in a mountain, kind of matters a lot when you think about it. So it's one of those where it's like, you know, the careful reader watching the movie for the first time would notice, he chose down. He's supposed to be going up, you know, but nobody else is going to notice that. So here is another one that's still inside of Moria, and it's the battle scene in the Chamber of Mazarbul. And this one is interesting because it also has some implications for the way that the movie does things, right? Frodo gets stabbed by a spear in both the book and the movie. Now, it's a little bit different, and by a little bit, I mean a lot different, because in the movie, we get this whole thing with the troll. You know, the whole Boromir line, they have a cave troll. And then, of course, the troll comes in, and they have to fight the cave troll along with all the goblins running amok. Well, in the book, Frodo does not get stabbed by a troll who is near unstoppable. In fact, the troll doesn't show up in the room at all. Gandalf only speculates that they might have a troll whenever he's dealing with trying to keep the door shut so the rest of them can hightail it out of there. What happens in the book is they're fighting a group of goblins that make their way into the room, and we actually get a very brief description of the battle. It's described as a sharp and, you know, kind of quick ordeal, really. But Aragorn and Boromir are doing a lot of the heavy lifting for obvious reasons. But the interesting thing is, there's this one last, I think he might even be described as like an orc captain or something like that. But he's got a shield and a spear, and he's kind of tougher than the rest of them, I guess. Because what happens is, Aragorn takes a swing at the guy, he ducks under it, and then bowls Aragorn over, and then kind of just drives Boromir back with his shield, and then he chucks his spear like a javelin and hits Frodo with it. Why is this important? Well, it actually is interesting to me because of the whole trope of easy-to-kill bad guys. Now, eventually, of course, in the book, this orc captain or whatever does get killed, right? But he makes it kind of hard on the good guys. And one of the things that we never really get in the book is detailed, you know, combat narrative. We don't get ideas of, you know, the thrust parry and all the other things that go along in some kind of hand-to-hand combat. We don't see it, obviously, and we don't get a description of it. In fact, it's really rare in books to get descriptions like that, because it's hard to describe to people who don't know a lot of combat lingo. But it's really interesting, because this is like one of the few places where Tolkien gives any detail of what happens in the combat, and it shows that these goblins are not just NPC enemies that you can just run through a video game and hack, 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 hack. You know, it's not that simple. Aragorn and Boromir are tried veterans of war. They know how to fight, and so they can take care of themselves in a fight situation, but that doesn't mean that every single enemy they come across is just like, aha, one slash, one kill, you know. Whereas in the movie, that's kind of the impression you get until you get to Lurtz, who is like, you know, the mini-boss of the Fellowship of the Ring. And for those of you who aren't familiar, that's the final Uruk-hai that Aragorn has to fight to save Boromir from getting shot in the face. And then, you know, you have a couple of instances like that, but in the movie, it is very much that kind of video game mini-boss type of thing. In the book, that doesn't happen. We never really get detailed descriptions. Mostly, we do kind of get descriptions of the good guys just kind of killing a lot of people because they're really good at what they do. But it's not ever stated that they're just like, oh yeah, I'm just hack slash, he's dead, hack slash, he's dead, hack slash, he's dead. You know, they win their fights, but it's because they're really good. That doesn't mean they can take them out in one swing. So, again, this is just kind of one of those interesting changes because of the way the movie handles things. And again, that's kind of forced by the way the movie has to do things, but it's interesting that Tolkien put just that little extra thought into it and was like, no, it's not quite that easy to kill every single orc, you know? So this next one is just after Moria, and it's, well, let's just say you kind of have to have watched, I think it's in the appendices, but it's definitely an interview with Orlando Bloom. They have just left Moria and they're all grieving Gandalf's death. Legolas is standing out there and he has this look on his face like, what just happened? And Orlando Bloom in an interview, which I think is in the appendices if you get the extended cut, said something along the lines of he was trying to convey this idea of, you know, he's an elf who's several thousand years old. He's never really seen people die. And so he's like, not really sure what to do with this, you know, death thing, right? And on the surface, that seems like kind of a neat idea, but Legolas is probably not unfamiliar with the concept of death. He would have been at least aware of all the people that died in Dale and whatnot at the Battle of Five Armies, And he's old enough that he would have seen a lot of other things happen too. Now, maybe he's never seen anybody really close to him die or get killed. And so you could still kind of sort of make that connection of, he's like, I've never had anybody close to me die. But the way Orlando Bloom describes it is, like he's just not familiar with death at all. It's like, just because he's an elf, that's not really the case, guy. All right, final one for this video. They make it to Lothlorien, and of course, they get, captured, taken by surprise at least, by the elves led by Haldir. Haldir is speaking to them in Elvish, and the way this is done too is kind of ham-fisted in the movie, because Haldir, when he first meets them, is immediately speaking their language, but then they get up in the thing and he's speaking Elvish, and Gimli of course gets peeved at this. In the book, they're speaking Elvish the whole time, and Haldir actually ends up saying, "Very few of this group here that I'm with know the common speech," so that's the only reason that's happening. In the movie, it actually is kind of rude for him to be speaking Elvish, and Gimli points this out. He's like, "So much for the legendary courtesy of the elves. Speak words we can all understand." And then Haldir says, "We have not had dealings with the dwarves since the dark days." You know what this dwarf says to that? And then he goes into this dwarf speech, which we don't understand, but apparently Aragorn does, and maybe even Haldir. It's not exactly clear. Haldir could be just taking offense at the fact that he's speaking angrily at him in Khuzdul. I don't know. But Aragorn, he rolls his eyes and then he grabs him and he says, "That was not so courteous." And it's like, how did Aragorn know what he said? And we don't even get any kind of closed caption or anything on the screen to explain what exactly Gimli said. We probably don't, because it was really, really rude. But in the book, it's made quite clear that virtually nobody knows the dwarf language. In fact, Gandalf tells the company when they're trying to get into Moria, "I don't think I'm going to have to guess anything in the dwarf language here, which nobody really knows because the dwarves don't teach it, because this is clearly meant for the elves to get in." So we already know from the book, like, nobody knows dwarf speech. We just don't, nobody knows that. But here, Aragorn, who is, he's 87 years old and he's a smart guy and he's done a lot of traveling, but why does he know it? So, in the movie, we never get this, obviously, of this idea that nobody learns the dwarf speech. But it is important because of, it's again that thing, that culture thing. Like, the dwarves are very secretive. They don't teach other people stuff just willy-nilly. They don't do that. And that gives us an insight into, their culture, their mindset, all that kind of stuff. Whereas in the movie, we get this one-off line where he speaks something in Khuzdul, which we don't ever get explained to us, and everybody with, an extensive knowledge of anything seems to just know what he says, which is kind of like, why? So, it's not a big deal as far as the plot goes, obviously, but again, one of those things that a fan of the books would notice as being very out of step with the actual story as told. So, that was basically part two of Changes to the Fellowship of the Ring. I don't know how many more changes there are going to be in the last part of the movie that I'll be able to put together, so I may have to, for the next one, bleed into the Two Towers a bit. It depends on how many I spot. But that'll wrap it for this one. If you're enjoying this series, please make sure to give me a thumbs up. Say anything that you think would also fit into this category. Don't necessarily cover anything, past the point in the narrative where I'm at now, because we don't want to spoil the next video. But, if you think I've missed any, do put those in the comments below. Make sure you subscribe to catch all my future content if you're interested in stuff like this. Make sure you tap that bell icon on YouTube to make sure you don't miss any notifications. Follow me on the platform formerly known as Twitter for Tolkien-related trivia questions, and check the description below for other support and social links. And until the next time, I'm the Tolkien Geek, signing out for the Tolkien Lore Channel. Namarie. Thanks to all my channel supporters, especially Paul Leone, Nathan Dufour, and Robert Kindling.